We seem to have a quorum, and I might say that I admire your loyalty, perhaps not your wisdom, on such a beautiful day to be here listening to me instead of outside. Today, and the mode of day, of course, is dialogue. Although I have quite a bit of material to give you today, you can interrupt any time up to a certain point. And then I'm going to say, from here on, you just have to listen. And this lecture is on the art of listening. My button is sort of this way. It's on communication today. I have a button for almost every lecture. And this button is just an attempt to communicate. That's what the button says today. Some of you were asking me. Have any of you had a course in listening comprehension?
I'm a married man.
Well, part of my material will be taken from Nichols. I've stolen judiciously from a lot of people. It's a modification of a lecture or a little discussion, sort of a lead for our in the orientation of our professional students. I just started last year, and they invited me to do it again this year. So they thought it might help them. Now, to an extent, you'll say, well, it's directed at the student, but at least part of it is. But I want you all to be students, but I think you'll find that it also pertains to you who are in business, you teachers, and you people at home. I may even give you some experiences at home. We do have trouble with this, don't we? I know this lady one morning, her five-year-old girl, she told her, why don't you go over and see how old Mrs. Smith is this morning? And so she went over and came back in a little while, and the little girl said, well, what'd she say? And how is Miss Smith? And she says, no, or how was the trip, you know? And the little girl says, it's none of your business, she said. You know, how old Mrs. Smith is. All right? So we do have this difficulty. It's the lament of every parent, of every teacher at some time, of every pupil, every child. You have ears, but you do not hear. It's a concern of everyone, or at least it should be. And how we spend our day, I think someone made a study, Hubble, I think was his name, who discovered that 98% of what we learn through our eyes and our ears. But much of the emphasis in our education system has little to do with the ears, as far as training goes. Rankin of Ohio, about 60 people log what they did each day. And 70% of the day for this particular group, now it differs among groups, but 70% of the day was spent in communication. 9% of this was done in writing, 16% in reading, 30% in speaking, and 45% in listening. Yet in our school system, how much time do we spend? Well, 12 or 16 hours, 12 or 16 years probably or more in the writing and reading. And I must admit that some of the PhDs that join my particular organization are still not able to read well or to write well, but at least they've had the course. For a long time, when I was growing up, speaking was only for those, I guess, the lawyer's son and the preacher's son, you know. And now we've developed that, so if you were here last night, you recognize that the students today are very articulate. We notice that. They're, in many cases, more articulate than my fellow professors and myself. And that's a good thing. But there's little time spent on listening, on instruction in listening comprehension. We treat it like, I think, in many cases, how you raise your kids. And how to make your marriage work, you know. It's supposed to come by instinct, I guess. Now, what was the status of this in the early 50s? When a survey was made of the various colleges, and there was one school who taught sort of the art of listening. It was Stevens College. It was sort of one of the social graces for these girls, you know. I mean, how to listen to somebody, I guess. And I know they were pretty successful. I know a fellow that married one of those girls. And in fact, she started to communicate with him in prison camp, and he looked her up when he got home, and the next thing I knew, he was married to her. He's still married to her. Now, a survey was also made, and he looked over about 3,000 papers on communication, and all were on reading save one, on listening comprehension. Now, what has been the university experience? Harvey Jones at Columbia had 486 students in his psychology class, and he'd give them some sterling lectures, you know, and he was always very displeased and very disheartened, because in testing them, and probably the test was haywire, but they couldn't come up with more than 50% of it, you know. I mean, they if they had a 50% retention, that was doing pretty well. And then he'd test them again after a period of time, and then it was down to 25%. And he wondered, boy, there must be something wrong. So he brought in, he selected out some of the best professors he knew, and he says, I want you to put in 10 minutes on your best lecture. Now, it's hard to give a lecture in 10 minutes. Although I'm trying to do that with some graduate students, where they have to be able to summarize the whole issue in 10 minutes and also present an abstract on it for their seminar. And it's very good training. But he had the professors do this, and then he did the testing again, and essentially the same results. Now, when Nichols learned about this, he says, well, there must be something wrong at Columbia or their students. Yet Columbia students were pretty good students. I don't know who's going there now, but I know in the early days they had pretty good students. And so he made a survey of students at the University of Minnesota. And he essentially got the same results, except he gave the second test much sooner. And he only had a 25% retention. Now, this is a very disturbing thing. For you who are in business, it must be a very disturbing thing. If you're trying to run a business with 98% efficiency, and in your communication system where you're depending a lot on learning, on listening comprehension, and you only have about a 25% efficiency, it's probably no wonder that the majority of businesses that started 25 or 30 years ago are no longer in business. Perhaps this contributes to it, this inability to learn. Now, one professor at Louisiana had a student come to him who wanted to do a PhD thesis on communication. And he says, well, I'll tell you what you're going to do. You're going down today, you're going to dress up, I'll make an appointment with some of the businesses, the managers of business. And you're going down to talk to them about their business. And so he did. And he had sort of a standard set of questions, you know, how do you feel about your communication system? How's the morale of the troop, sort of thing? And the sort of the universal reply was, well, we have outstanding communications in this organization. We have loyal employees. They understand the objectives of our business. And we're running, you know, at high efficiency. I mean, this was sort of the universal reply. And so he came back and he reported this to his professor. And then the professor says, all right, now you'll put on some overalls. And here is a whole stack of notebooks. And now you're going down as an assistant truck driver or whatever it might be to work in these same businesses. And you're going to communicate with with the workers and find out how they feel about management. And boy, it was altogether a different story, you know. I mean, it was a lousy bunch of managers. They had little concern for the employees. They didn't really know what the company was all about, and they just got sort of a lousy deal. And he detected very little loyalty to these businesses where the businessmen themselves thought they had it, you know. In a General Electric company, I mean, they have made an unusual attempt, I think, to try to find out what the employee feels, how he feels about it. They have gone to opinion surveys where you're supposed to really speak up, you know, and you try to fix it so they can't pick your organization out. I remember I was in a unit one time where and my associates were encouraged to really speak up, you know, and really give your opinion, you know, without telling, you know, which organization you were, so they could never pin it on the person, you know. And we had about the lousiest attitude of the whole plant, you see, this particular organization. And we were visited by the manager for a long time afterwards, you know, to try to find out what was wrong with this outfit, you know. Well, they didn't catch us on the next one, but these are some of the things that happen. To try to communicate from the upper levels of management down, or vice versa. There have been surveys made of how much do you lose, for example, on horizontal versus vertical. I mean, a foreman talking to a foreman, there's pretty good communication because they speak the same language. But going from the manager or the chairman of the board to the manager or the vice president down to the superintendents or the sort of division or departmental managers, there's a lot lost in transition. And pretty soon you're down to 10 or 20% of what it really started out to be. And this is, of course, a very discouraging thing. And that's why now many businesses, and maybe some of you are in it, where you have actually taken a course in listening comprehension. I think 3M has a course, and the Army has gone into this in a big way on listening comprehension. Now, they've tried a lot of techniques, you know. One company decided that, well, to really find out, sort of, to really have a listening post to find out how the people feel about the organization, the workers, they needed a mother figure. So they went out and obtained a nurse, a motherly type of lady, very intelligent and a wonderful person. And they set her up in business. And people, you know, lined up to come and talk to her, you know. And sort of, it looked like, boy, this is a great listening post. And it was good for about a couple of days. And then somebody said that she was just a lapdog to the manager, you know, the general manager. And the business quit, you know. I mean, they all went back to the bench. And another company who observed this said, well, they're haywire, you know. What a person needs is a father figure. And they went out and got a retired priest who was a hail fellow, well met, a very fine fellow. And they set him up in business. And about the same thing happened, you know. I mean, he's just a listening post for the chairman of the board, you know. And that was all she wrote. Now, What are the traits of a bad listener and a good listener? What does one look for? And that's going to be the part of my discussion now as we go on. And you can interrupt along here at any time you wish. But this survey, part of the points are made by Nichols, because what he did was in his testing program, and realizing that these students just weren't getting what he was trying to put across or what the professors were trying to get across, He sort of separated the bad listeners from the good listeners in his class. And then he tested them out to see, well, what are the qualities of these people? What makes them bad listeners? And then also to look at who were the good listeners and what their attributes were. And so now we're going to review 9 or 10 points here of the qualities of a bad listener. And I racked my class for this. Because I used to sit back in at least one class, which is a large class, Well, by a large class in a professional school, I'm talking about 85 people. And in order to know just where my lectures fit in, I mean, I'd sit through as much of the course as I could to see, you know, how things were going. And it was very disturbing to me. Some of the kids, students, they'd sit there, you know, and they'd talk to each other, or they'd read a paper or something like this. Well, when you got completely turned off, I mean, why even bother to come, you know? And so that's sort of number zero, you know. I mean, he talks to his neighbor, but one of the qualities that Nichols, or one of the first failings was that the person comes in and he says, well, he has a preconceived notion. He says it's an uninteresting subject, you know. And I'm sure you've been faced with this. You hear there's going to be a lecture given, or you students, you know, maybe there's a, you see on your notice for the day that somebody's going to be there, and they give a subject title which probably has nothing to do with their lecture. They try to make catchy ones, but or the man stands up and he says, I'm going to talk about, you know, this or that. And you say, oh boy, I mean, what do we need that for, you know? And the point that Nichols makes here and others make is that there's no such a thing as an uninteresting subject. There are only uninteresting listeners. G.K. Chesterton said that, and many others before and after him. He's one of my favorites because he thinks pigs are great, and he thinks pigs are beautiful. And I'm going to tell some of you about how beautiful they are before I leave here at the end of the month, and I'll also convince you of it. But he's also a great writer for other reasons, and perhaps some of you have read him. But if you go in and say, now, what can I get out of this? You know, maybe this can be interesting. What can I get out of it? The other, and I'm going to take these next two points together. And this is often a breakdown, and I've noticed in my students, and I do a couple of gimmicks for this just to make the point. We don't wear ties up here, so I don't use that gimmick. But they criticize the speaker, and then they have a sort of a overstimulation because of it, and so then they're sort of turned off. And I've even watched these students as I come in. And now it doesn't work so good. I remember I gave this lecture quite a while ago, and that was in the days when we were wearing narrow ties. You know, things change so fast. And my son calls these things belly warmers. You know, they're real wide. Well, we're wearing them again now. But I came in with a belly warmer tie on, you know. And that was a thing that, you know, nobody wore then except guys like me. And and you could see them, you know. or when I come in, I'm sure, you know, someone said, boy, you know, I'd like to have that nose full of nickels, you know, or look at the ears on that one, you know, or dig those glasses, you know. I mean, where do you get those, you know? Like you said, you know, couldn't you pay for the other half, you know? Or some of you are sitting close to me, you know, you'll say, hey, typical old professor, you know. He's got one brown sock on and one green one, you know? Huh? Or, it was early in the morning. It was before 6 when I went bird watching, you know. And I'm pretty bright and shiny in the morning, but I didn't get to bed before after 12, you know. We were protesting on the campuses. And I couldn't go to sleep right away. But this is what you do, you know. And while you are doing this, while you're making these statements, you know, or evaluating the speaker, and then maybe he starts out and maybe he speaks sort of awkwardly, you know, or he's got an accent, or and while this is going on, you've missed my most critical points, you know. That's what I told the class. I mean, some of the most brilliant statements I make are right at the first of the lecture. And you're up there looking over my my garb, you know, or you're making comments about my stuttering or something like that, you know, and you've missed some important points. If somebody came in here today and says, you better bug out of here, this rat nest's on fire, you know. I mean, you're not going to say, couch that in better rhetoric, are you? You're going to get out of here. So try to get the point of what he's trying to say. So hear them out before you judge them. Another thing, and we become so over-concerned with facts and detail, you know. I know in some of the class, you know, huh? You're worried about the statistics, and I get so mad at my class because when they, and professionals are tend to do this, you know, maybe they got 11 cases or they got 10 cases and maybe there's 6 positive, so they report it as well, that isn't a good number, 11 to 6, you know, and they give it to you in 4 significant figures, you know, like 66.66, you know, and it's out of 11 cases, you know. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous, you know, to go to these kind of details. Think of it sort of in general terms, you know, whether it's two-thirds or something like this, and that some of you teachers are to blame for this because you want these exact things when it isn't important. I tell my students that I don't know of anything biologically that is significant beyond 2 significant figures. The most critical biological entity or value is a woman's age. And I'm not interested in them, I mean, whether they're 29.2 or 29, you know? And you shouldn't be either, you see? And that's one of the most critical things. So remember that. Don't get hung up in these details. You get all jazzed up in the periphery. You can't see the woods for the trees, you know. Look for those main points. Or we get overzealous in outlines. Now, I do, and this is some of how I learn. You probably see me up here making notes, you know. Well, sometimes I'm making notes for my next lecture, you know, because I'm still in preparation. By the time I get down here, you probably figure that out. I'm still preparing. I also make notes, and a lot of times in sermons at church, you know, it's interesting to see, you know, did the preacher have an outline today? Kind of a challenge. Sometimes he doesn't, you know, or and the students sometimes, you know, they find out that they make a terrific outline, you know, and boy, the professor never had it, you know, but maybe it'd be helpful if they turned it into him. I often outline, I put up an outline on the board sometimes, or I usually hand it out. And it has the advantage that if you go to sleep, you'll wake up, you'll know where you are, I tell them, and more importantly, you'll know how far you are from the end. You know? So it's best when somebody starts in, well, you wait a little while and to see, you know, what he's up to, and then try to figure out, well, what are the principal facts here? Another thing of the bad listener, he fakes attention, you know. Well, I know I used to do that, you know. You'd sit up in the front row for the teacher, you know, and boy, you'd be listening there. You might be 10 miles away, but boy, you were using everything, you know, to kind of look them straight in the eye. You probably didn't see them, but you looked them straight in the eye. Had the ear bones all cocked, you know. But you were wasting energy and tension trying to look like you were listening when you weren't. And this is what Nichols found. Another thing, you tolerate bad performance. The students do this and many others. I guess it isn't nice to stand up, you know, in a big lecture and say, you know, boy, you know, and start criticizing. But I think it's fair in certain situations to do this. And I think our students should. I mentioned to some of you last night, we have a large lecture room in one of the ones I teach in, and it's a big slope, and the screen is way back there, and there's a PA system, but all professors aren't wired for sound, you know, and they mumble down there. You can't hear them halfway back, and they're not using the PA system. Well, I say that the students should say, turn it up, you know, or something. Or put on the PA system. And then they show some slides down there, or they have some charts, and you can't see it, you know. Or they go up on the blackboard. Boy, I used to get mad at the professors that did this. You start in, like, in differential equations or something, you go through some of these, you know, and you didn't get them out before he was back there erasing it, you know. Well, tell him so. I mean, raise Cain with him. Don't tolerate a bad performance. And I've sat in the back of that room, and sometimes I couldn't stand it any longer, you know. I'll say, I can't see it, you know. They'd all look back at me like I was crazy. It's like they didn't want to see it. Another characteristic of these is that they had no interest in painstaking and technical listening. And he made a survey, you know, what TV programs they watch. Well, I hardly ever watch TV, but what programs do they watch, you know? I mean, Red Skelton, you know, and I Dream of Jeannie, and you know, things like, you know, inane stuff, you know, that, well, some of it's almost nauseating. And you know, there isn't, it doesn't take much to listen, you know. It's gauged to about the fifth or sixth grade, or less. Very few of them, of the poor listeners, you know, would listen to things like College Bowl or Face the Nation, or the Bell Telephone Hour, things that, you know, you had to be alert to get it. So training will help is the point I'm trying to make here. And then we let emotional words throw us. We'll be going along and we'll mention certain things like LSD or Harry Truman or Governor Reagan right now. I mean, that'll get a real, I mean, when you mention that on a college campus today, I mean, I'm sure there's a reaction, you know, or Vietnam. These are charged words. Or Siran. I mean, all of these have a connotation, and a bad listener then gets carried away by these. I mean, you can't shut them off. I mean, you start thinking about it and extending your thoughts, and you've then wiped out the speaker. And then there are mental lapses, and we all have these, and some of it is we who speak tend to allow you to do this. And I was going to speak much faster today, and some of it maybe I will speak faster, but I think most of the people here today would be far better off if I spoke not at about 100 words a minute that I have been doing now, but much faster. You would pay closer attention. And I've tried this on my class a few times where you speak very rapidly and you try to bring out all the points in a very, very fast and very short order. You try to make all your points. And they are really paying closer attention when you're doing this. But when I go to lectures now, and I have to attend quite a few seminars because we have people in, and or some of the students are presenting seminars, or somebody's coming there to look over a job and they have to present a seminar and you have to give an evaluation. And they expect some of us to ask intelligent questions. You know, so because it's kind of dead, you know, when you give a seminar and then you say, well, are there any questions, you know? Nobody asks any questions. Well, except some of the younger professors, they like to ask erudite questions. And some of them do. But what I do when I go to them, I always bring a lot of work. And I turn them on for about 15 seconds. And I kind of get the gist of it, and then I go back to answering this letter or doing something, you know. And I turn them on again for a little while, you know. I get a lot of work done this way, and I think I get some of the points. And I think we contribute to it because of the speed at which I'm doing it. And I think we should learn to speak faster and to comprehend faster so that we can get more out of it. Now, just briefly on some of the attributes of the good listener. He anticipates the next point. And so you learn by contrast, and you learn by repetition. And I found this helps me on many occasions. You know, when somebody says something, I do repeat it to myself. So you are, because learning does call for repetition. Somebody makes 3 points, and you say, and so you repeat these 3 points back to you. Or you try to anticipate, now what's he going to say next? Like, I was going through here now. You should have been, probably if you're a good listener, you would have been going on. Now what is another point that should be made as far as a good listener goes? Well, if you guessed wrong, you see, then you might learn by contrast. Another thing that a good listener does is to identify the building blocks, if in fact there is a structure to the lecture. And then try to pick up the evidence and sort of develop a structure. And at least in the professional school where I teach, I try to tell them, I mean, you have to have a structure on which to build. If I'm lecturing on the thyroid works in a certain way, and you build a sort of a simple structure, and then you add to it, or you have to pull out one block and put another one in because some new information has come. Otherwise, it's just sort of a blur. So you build these simple structures. And I've already mentioned this mental recapitulation, that you keep going back. And another point I make to my students, and this is why dialogue is so important. And I think most of the learning is done outside in dialogue among them. When I went through professional school, I mean, I studied, you always pick out somebody that's smarter, you know. And then you ask one another questions. And I know I'd ask questions maybe I knew the answer to, because I'd get another view. And a lot of times I'd have it developed. And I always try to tell the students, study with somebody else. And if the person is not as bright, you do learn by telling him and explaining things to him. And there's where the real learning situation comes. And you also learn you make some very good friends this way. Now, I know some of you don't like Hayakawa, but at one time he was a great man in communication. I mean, a lot of people quoted him. This is something he did on how to attend a conference. But I thought it was pretty good. He says, it is necessary to emphasize that listening does not mean simply maintaining a polite silence while you are rehearsing in your mind the speech you are going to make the next time you can grab a conversational opening. And we do that, don't we, you know? I mean, you're talking to me, you know, and I'll say, boy, I got to figure out a sharp answer for that, you know? So I just wait for you to finish, you know? Sometimes I don't wait for you to finish. Nor does listening mean waiting alertly for the flaws in the other fellow's arguments so that later you can mow him down. Listening means trying to see the problem the way the speaker sees it, which means not sympathy, which is feeling for him, but empathy, which is experiencing with him. Listening requires entering actively and imaginatively into the other fellow's situation and trying to understand a frame of reference different from your own. This is not always an easy task. Now, does anyone want to bring up anything before I go to the next portion of this?
Is there anything that getting the listener's attention? Should a speaker do this first? So it could be an opening, warm up, a joke, or something like that.
Yeah, this is very helpful, you know. And I think Carol made this point the other day, you know. Tell them something ridiculous. I mean, sometimes I do. We got to face it, even in university, I think I sometimes over-gimmick, you know. You got to gimmick them or tell them some crazy thing, you know. I mean, just to get their attention. I'm always reminded of the fellow, he went out and he got a hired man, a new hired man. His other one quit. And he said, there's one thing I insist on, and that is that you are kind to the animals. I mean, when you get to know animals, you can communicate with them. And this is, in fact, true. I'm reading a story now about Never Cry Wolf, you know. I mean, where these Eskimos really communicate with these wolves, and it's a remarkable thing. Fantastic. I love wolves. But, and they're not anything like you think they are, unless you know something about wolves. And, but he says you have to learn to communicate with these. And so he took him out in the farmyard, you know. There's an old mule standing there, you know, sort of like this. And He went up and picked up a 2x4, you know, and he went up and he whacked the mule over the head, you know. And he was like gassed, you know. He says, you're telling me you should be kind to these animals, communicate with them. He says, yeah, but you got to get their attention first. and to an extent, you know, you got to, and if you see them leaving you, and I try to have a few in the pocket, you know, so that, you know, if things, you can look over the crowd and you can see whether they're with you or not. But there are some subjects you have to discuss that, you know, it's a total loss in a way. You know? So I guess, you know, you just have to hope that the hour goes by. But usually you can tell whether you're with them. And if you're losing some of them, it's time, you know, to do something. I had a professor once that, he'd actually, and I don't know if anybody was really asleep or not, but I mean, he'd throw a eraser or chalk, and he was very accurate. And he says, that's offense number one. I mean, if I keep you sleeping once, you know, I mean, you get the eraser, you know, and after he'd thrown the eraser, you know. And he says, the second time, you know, he says, you get water, and he pulled out a pail of water from underneath the lectern. I never saw him do it. But I'm not so sure if he wouldn't have, you know. So you live in expectation. Anticipation is greater than realization. Many times.
Leo.
Yes.
Early in your talk, you made one point that the bad listener gets less of the talking by having an attitude of criticism towards the speaker while he's listening. And a little later, you said that a bad listener tolerates bad performance.
If you can't hear him, or if you can't see his presentation, you know, in other words, this chart might be very critical to make this point, but if you can't see it, you know, I want to see that, you see, or I can't hear you, you know, that's something different than that I'm wearing my some old army fatigues, you know, or my shoes are something out of Austria, you know, or I got two different kind of socks. That has nothing to do with the subject matter. At least I hope it doesn't, you see, or that these half glasses, or that I look so funny, you know. I mean, you see, that's one type of criticism, you know, but the other is has to do with the subject matter, and that's an altogether different. And I'm glad you brought that point.
You are suggesting then that the listener should not listen critically.
Oh, he must listen critically, but I'm saying he should not criticize how the speaker looks. You see?
Very well. Pretty
you know,
content.
But yeah, criticize the content. Right. Very good.
Well, you were talking about at the beginning too. When he walked in, wasn't this the idea? A lot of people just free form.
Oh yeah. I mean, you see him come in and you say, boy, we really need that guy, don't we, you know? Yeah, that's right.
And then you're shut off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't you think, though, that dress has something to do with the performance of a speaker? I can remember a high school teacher I had that, I heard that when she died, she left a $600,000 estate. An old maid, that she wore, I can only remember two dresses that she ever wore.
Yeah, I had a teacher, he had two ties.
Yeah. Now, I think a lot of kids were turned off one just because. And when I see school teachers, I think kids like to see their school teachers dress. In fact, my primary teachers that I had, they like red, you know, and kids like red, and they watch them. But if they would wear a black dress every day, I'm sure they'd be turned off.
Some kids like red.
Yeah, well, some kids like red.
Probably more kids like red than maybe some of the colors.
Right. Well, they like bright colors, I should have said that.
That's this year, in a way.
But even if they dress well, then they can still be preoccupied with...
Yeah, they get preoccupied with this, you see.
Well,
and this is, you know,
can go to extremes, too, but I think you got to look kind of with it. Unless you really want to be out of it, and then maybe that's part of it, though, too.
Well, that's part of getting attention, though, isn't it?
Yeah, right.
And some of the better retail stores are taught to dress
Yeah, to take, you put the attention on the material rather than them.
Eccentricities in dress might be classified of them as part of bad performance.
Yes.
I disagree with that. I think that that is a bad part of the bad listening.
Yes, that's
a... When they are not important.
Now, we should give this lecture to them when they're one.
I think you would say it depends upon the maturity of the person. You cannot choose grade school children for wanting their teacher to be attractive, and then this can be a way of getting their attention. But I think oftentimes I've noticed too that if a person who is trying to say something is rather humble and doesn't have a reputation made, that people won't be prone to listen to them. Very often they have something to say, but this person that they're trying to talk to won't listen because, well, why should I listen to them? They can't help me climb up my ladder. And I think this is another part of this.
In some cases, the appearance of the teacher
yes. I use it that way. Yeah, but the whole point of this is that, I mean, maybe if you close your eyes a bit, you know, and just say now, boy, what is he trying to tell me? And what's in it for me? And you brought up about the little children, you know, that they like, you know, have somebody that's attractive, but you know, they don't differentiate in many cases. I think a child often looks more at the person, you know. I mean, I know some of them, you know, like one fellow, he had a beard and then he shaved his beard off and the child didn't even notice it, you know. I mean, and I think the critical story in this happened to Paul Fanning's daughter. And I tell this story often. I think you should tell him about that. I think that's a very significant story. Could you tell him that? You know, down in Oakland.
Our youngest daughter.
Can you all hear him?
Our youngest
daughter. You have to say loud.
Our youngest daughter. Our youngest daughter is a very blonde, blue-eyed, Scandinavian type. And she taught for 2 years in Oakland on the wrong side of the track. Her class... total enrollment of the school were nearly all little raisins in the sun. So was the teaching staff, the principal. Barbara enjoyed her work very much. She made some very close friends among the teaching staff. One of her best friends was a Miss Johnson, and another one was a Miss Smith. And both of them had skin about the color of Raoul's socks. That's black, in case you can't see it. And one day, Barbara's standing in the doorway of the seventh grade classroom talking to Miss Smith, and she and Miss Smith overheard this conversation from two little seventh grade girls who were walking down the hall. One of them said to the other, "Was that Miss Fanning or Miss Johnson standing there talking with Miss Smith?" The other one said, "I don't know, I never could tell those two apart."
That's great, isn't it? Like the song in South Pacific, you know, you got to teach them that. All right, now we have a few minutes left, and there's a few other points I want to make. This, and I recall for you, as I have on other occasions, the failure in our society in our listening to one another. And this this fellow is named John Godfrey, and he spent his life as a mediocre lawyer in an eastern city. He was an immigrant. Whether his parents were immigrants, he wanted to be a poet, but his immigrant parents said, "Boy, you'll be a lawyer and be great, you know." Well, he always was a mediocre lawyer. He was a quiet, dignified sort of fellow. And he himself had done, of course, a lot of listening in his time. And unbeknownst to a lot of people, he also accumulated a good deal of money. And he had quite a large holding and was in this town. The town built around him, and he didn't sell very much of it, so he ended up sort of, when he was 80 years old, with a large plot of ground. And he decided that he would build a very unusual building there. And he wouldn't, of course, he didn't tell anybody, you know, what this was all about except the contractors. He engaged one of the best architects, and they did, in fact, build a very beautiful structure. And many people were very curious about this structure as to what it was. It was finally completed, and inlaid in gold over the door were these words: "The man who listens." At the dedication, by way of explanation, John Godfrey said, "One of the most terrible aspects of this world today is that nobody listens to anyone else. If you are sick or even dying, nobody listens. If you are bewildered or frightened or lost or bereaved or alone or lonely, nobody really listens. Even the clergy are hurried and harassed. They do their best and work endlessly. But time has taken on a fragmented character. It doesn't seem to have any substance any longer. Nobody has time to listen to anyone. Not even those who love you and would die for you. Your parents, your children, your friends, they have no time. That's a very terrible thing, isn't it? Whose fault is it? I don't know. But there doesn't seem to be any tie." Now, these words are really those of Taylor Caldwell in her novel, The Listener. It's a very interesting book. But you don't have to go to the pages of a novel to hear the story. You can hear it from a young boy who wrote to his parents these words: "Dear folks, thank you for everything. But I'm going to Chicago and I'm trying to start some kind of new life. You asked me why I did those things and why I gave you so much trouble, and the answer is easy for me to give you. But I'm wondering if you will understand. Remember when I was about 6 or 7 and I used to want you to just listen to me? I remember all the nice things you gave me for Christmas and my birthday, and I was really happy with them. About a week at the time I got the things, but the rest of the time during the year, I really didn't want presents. I just wanted some time for you to listen to me, like I was somebody who felt things too. Because I remember even when I was young, I felt things. But you said you were too busy. Mom, you're a wonderful cook, and you had everything so clean, and you were tired so much from doing all the things that made you busy. But you know something, Mom? I would have liked crackers and peanut butter just as well if you'd only sat down with me a while during the day and said to me, 'Tell me all about it, so I can maybe help you understand.' And when Donna came, I couldn't understand why everyone made so much fuss, because I didn't think it was my fault that her hair was so curly, her skin so white, and she doesn't have to wear glasses with such thick lenses. Her grades are better too, aren't they? Now, if Donna ever has children, I hope you will tell her just to pay some attention to the one who doesn't smile very much, because that is the one that will really be crying inside. And when she's about to bake 6 dozen cookies, to make sure first that the kids don't want to tell her about a dream or a hope or something. Because thoughts are important too, to small kids, even though they don't have so many words to use when they tell about what they have inside of them. I think that all the kids who are doing so many things that grown-ups are tearing out their hair about and worrying are really looking for somebody that will have time to listen to for a few minutes, and who really and truly will treat them as they would a grown-up, who might be useful to them, you know, polite to them. If you folks had ever said to me, 'Pardon me,' when you interrupted me, I would have dropped dead. If anybody asks you where I am, Tell them I've gone looking for somebody with time, because I've got a lot of things I want to talk about. Now that's a true story, and unfortunately it is not a unique one. And I, in recalling in my past life, in a few cases where I mean, people have come to me and said, you know, you really helped me out that time. And I'd have to really think, you know, what did I really do for him? I really couldn't think about it, you know. But I had listened to them. I had listened to them. And this is part of the problem in our university today, and I've run into a lot of students. You show me a student, and sometime he's going to have a problem, you know. And there aren't very many people listening to him today. There's not enough people to listen, and there's too many to be listened to. That's why I suggested last night that we ought to assign so many students to each professor. And sometimes the professor are probably better than listening to somebody else than their own family. But in this regard, I have found, and I mean, I'm not a great one. If you've talked to Becky here, you'll find out that her father probably doesn't listen well to her. At least she thinks so. The best communication is when you have them alone. When I go out and say you jog at night or something, you go out running, or go out for a walk, you know. And this is a great thing. Or also with your wife, you know. And we live outside of town, so it's real dark out there, and you can see the stars. And you're all alone. You don't, you know, when you're talking to that, you're listening to your wife. You're not tempted to look on the at the TV tube or at the paper on the table, you know, and say, no, you're listening, but you're reading, you know. Out in the dark, while you're walking, there isn't much to divert you, you know. And you can get a lot of big issues settled that way in listening. So I commend this exercise to you.
How does your wife entice you?
Well, I take her out walking. Or running, and she broke her hip, but she's back jogging again now. So that works. Now, we are not the only ones that have trouble with this. And as important as it is to listen to one another, we must first listen to God. And he had a lot of trouble with this, you know, and so did the prophets. 1,200 references in the Bible have to do with listening and hearing. You have ears, but you do not hear. How many times is that in the Bible? It's a common complaint. And he had this trouble. We must first, as I said, listen to God. And where do we hear him? Dr. Rognes said that you either hear him everywhere or you hear him nowhere. To hear him, you must hear him in Jesus Christ. First, it's a local voice before it becomes a universal one. You hear him in one place before you hear him in every place. God remains a vague, mysterious, and hidden power, and therefore not the great God of creation until you have him in the person of someone who walked among us. The roar of a cascading stream remains just a roar. The rustle of the wind in the trees remains but a rustle. Nature speaks only her own language unless you have heard God speak to you through Jesus Christ. Happy is the man, the woman, the child who has tuned his ear to the living word. Then everything begins to speak of God, and knowing his love, you know his majesty. Know his love, you can see his handiwork in the intricate and complex designs of creation. But there is a risk in listening to him, for then you risk hearing other voices, the groans, the cries of the unfortunate of the world, people with problems as close as your own house, in the house next door. Now, there are many stories and many statements that we can listen to that leave us undisturbed. If I tell you today that trees are green, the sky is blue, and H2O is water, they leave you in peace. your life is really unchanged. But there are things that we can hear that are most disturbing. An illustration of this might help. Many, many years ago, one night, my wife proposed to me. The chief, you know, she said, "I love you and I want to marry you." At least that's my version of the story. Now I couldn't just, you know, say, "Well, good night," and go home and have a glass of buttermilk and go to bed. Because this kind of a word calls for a decision. Either I had to reject her or give my heart to her. So it did not leave me unmoved. Now God's call to us is like that. The old story of Jesus and his love is like that. We cannot listen to the word that Jesus bar Joseph, the carpenter of Nazareth, was in fact and in truth, and in the most exact and literal sense of the word, the God by whom all things were made. He was not merely a man so good as to be like God. He was God. We cannot face the cross where Christ died to forgive our sins so that we might obtain sonship. We cannot hear this story and do nothing. We must either escape the tormenting reach of the story by rejecting him, or be caught up in the wonderment of it all, in the sheer wonder of his love. He that has ears to hear, let him hear. The Lord is near to all who call upon him, to all who call upon him in truth. And that is all I have to say this morning.